from sea to shining sea, all over the country and across the world. This is Coast to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone, filling in for George Norrie tonight. And what can I say? I have been waiting for the show for the past week because this is an opportunity to showcase what Coast to Coast does best. Tonight, we're going to be talking with Thomas Fusco, who has a theory, a scientifically provable theory about the nature, the science of the unexplained, of the paranormal. And I've spoken with him at length a few months ago, and I was really impressed. It stuck with me. As someone who has been a researcher in all kinds of phenomena, I've been around the world, this really, really stuck with me. So we're going to talk about how is it that his scientific theory can be applied to get this poltergeist phenomenon, orbs, ghosts, hauntings, even stuff of biblical proportion. And you're going to see how it all fits together. Very interesting fellow. His book is called Behind the Cosmic Veil. And you're going to take your turn asking him questions. And of course, open lines later in the show. So I want to hear about your experiences because this one really is a good show to get involved with. If you have something that you can share related to your own personal experience, because I think what's great about Coast is a lot of people call in, they say what happened and what's going on. But this is somebody who sort of, you know, has come along for about 20 years and says, well, you know, I've got a theory. I think a piece of the puzzle here. And for me, it really is something that I had to think twice about. I think, you know what, this guy actually has something. And the fact that it's based on a very understandable scientific principle, I think you're going to be really impressed. Now, that's coming right up. But first, a quick update. Since the last show I did about chemtrails, I have got hundreds and hundreds of emails, and not just from great people listening in this country and Coast listeners, but people in other countries, and Australia and England and Europe. And they really were electrified by this because what they found was that, yeah, there is a phenomenon that's going on and has been going on for 10 years. I know. I've been literally around the world seeing it in different countries since the early 2000s. And when we brought in Clifford Carnicom and talked about it, we talked about some of the Morgellons and some of the other aspects. I think people really said, you know what, this is something I really just can't turn away from anymore. And I was getting reports from all over. In fact, the funny thing was that people said, you know, the chemtrail stopped a day or two after the show, and then they started back up again. And I have to say, here in Los Angeles, where I'm doing the show from now, is the same way. We've just been getting inundated. And I have people telling me, email me all the time about this phenomenon. It literally has not stopped. So I just want everyone to know that that's something that I was really blown away about, the response that came through. And I'm still working on that. And, well, in the news, what can I say? North Korea tried to light up a Roman candle. They were trying to show off, and it went boom in their face. Now, I think, talking to some insiders that I know, that this was sort of an inside job. This was the one time where this black military industrial complex actually did what it was supposed to do, from what I am hearing. And it took the form of some sort of X-ray laser, some sort of directed energy weapon from a satellite. And, you know, if that is the case, if this was shot down by one of our clandestine satellites orbiting, which they have, you know, all the power in the world to do, then I would say, all right, you know, that's a step in the right direction. And not just because it got that missile down and because it threw the egg on the face of that horrible dictatorship, but because what they normally would do is let that thing go and let it, you know, hit its target so that we could have this endless excuse for military operations and arms sales and to go in and have things escalate. Because that's where it seems like the power center is brokered in this tiny little world of ours. So the fact that this thing came down on its own, or if it was assisted, I say, you know, that's kind of a step in the right direction. Because instead of trying to push this thing toward the inevitable sale of more weapons and systems that shoot down weapons. You know, maybe they're doing something right for the first time. And so I have to say that that's something I'm still trying to get some information on. If you got anything, let me know. We're going to jump right in to this interview with Thomas Fusco right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. Rob Simone here filling in for George Norrie. And we have a guest that's going to talk about the science of the paranormal. And he says that there is sort of an understandable intelligence in the universe. And let's face it, if the human mind is a subset of the universe and we're intelligent, well, that means the universe is too. And he has got a line on perhaps a sort of a unified field theory that explains a lot of different phenomenon with the same explanation. You're going to love this. His book is called Behind the Cosmic Veil. Thomas P. Fusco, welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, Rob. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Oh, great. Thanks. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Hey, well, you know, we talked a few months ago, and I was really impressed by how you have come to the subject with a very sort of pragmatic approach. And, you know, let's face it, you've done your due diligence in your theory. So I think this is something that pushes this whole field a little bit further. But you didn't start off as someone that was trained or fascinated by the paranormal. You were basically just a regular guy, but you've had some interesting experiences that when it has to do with sort of precognition.
Yes, that's correct. That was in my teen years and early 20s. I had several such experiences where I had, you know, information available to me that there's no way I should have. Mm-hmm. And it was so detailed that it went beyond anything that would be considered random chance or lucky guess, that type of thing. And being a very pragmatic and scientifically minded guy, these experiences caused me to question what I was taught about science and how the universe was put together. And so for me, the pressing question became, what kind of a universe would allow these types of things to happen? And it was to answer that question that started me on my research for several decades.
Yeah, tell me the story about when you were looking at that picture in your girlfriend's house. It's sort of sets
yeah.
the tone.
Well, probably a little premature at that time to call her a girlfriend.
Okay.
She had been she was a freshman in high school. I had met her just the week before.
Okay.
And she had invited me over to her house for lunch. And as I was standing around in her parents' living room, looking at different pictures that were on the walls while she was making sandwiches, I came in front of this one painting. And while I was looking at it, I got a severe pain in my left forearm. And it was kind of mysterious. But when she came back in the room, the question that came off the top of my head was just, it was just bizarre. And I asked her just matter-of-factly, did the person who painted this picture ever injure their arm? And she just about turned white. If you think about all the different details or points of interest that would have gone into that type of a question, it's not something that anyone could have reasoned. But what she told me was that her brother, her older brother, and I had no idea she had any siblings, was actually an amateur painter. He had been working on this painting several years before. And during the time he was working on it, he was working out in the folks' backfield there with a chainsaw and actually severely injured his left forearm with. And so that kind of experience makes you wonder how things are put together. And for me, it wasn't a type of a situation where I was fascinated so much with doing such a thing, but with knowing how it could be.
And is it safe to say your mind was just sort of blank and it just sort of popped in while you weren't even thinking?
Pretty much so. It was like an offhand question. Hey, by the way, and it really came in my mind like that.
Yeah, well, that I know exactly what you mean. It's happened to me. And so is this sort of these experiences sort of what started you off on really, because some people would just put it out of their mind and they would live a normal life. You know, they'd sell insurance and get married, but there's something that really stuck with you.
I was always one of those children that had to know why for everything.
Ah.
And for me, Rob, it was a sincere, you know, it wasn't kind of a game that some kids play. It was a sincere inquiry, sincere and curiosity. So that really became the compelling drive that caused me to begin to look into how reality might be put together.
Mm-hmm. So take us into this book now. How did you start off really compiling this in a very, you know, clear, pragmatic theorem?
Well, the first thing that I took into consideration was that supernatural and paranormal phenomena, to me, was a very important body of evidence that for us to really understand how the universe is put together and how it works, we need to have some sort of a handle on what these things are and why they do what they do. The second part of it was to take that kind of information, that kind of evidence, that body of evidence, and try to give it a scientifically reasonable definition. So normally, as you know, traditionally paranormal and supernatural is kind of a catch-all basket. Anything that's odd or weird or unusual, people dump it in there. But that's not good enough to try to reckon soundly with. So for me, when I really thought about it, I found that all the things that these events shared in common was that they were physical observations that actually had physical effects that interacted with their immediate physical surroundings, but had no direct physical cause directly connected locally to the event. And so to me, that's what distinguishes what is supernatural or paranormal. Physicists, as we know, have a name for this. They call it non-local causality, or non-locality for short, where we have an effect with no direct connected local physical cause. And then once I was able to establish that and be convinced that, yes, this is an absolute quality that is in common with all these phenomena, and that science also recognizes this kind of effect, then the pegs began to fall and things began to start connecting from one field to the next, and a coherent picture began to emerge for me.
Well, let's jump into physics a little bit here. The Einstein, you know, Podolsky-Rosen paradox, you talk about Bell's theorem and how things can communicate seemingly faster than light. And there are these, you know, things that are out there in physics that are at least halfway accepted. Is this something that you feel lies at the center of explaining a lot of these different paranormal phenomena?
Well, what non-local causality indicates to me is that two things. Primarily, that there is a what I call a super geometric, a super physical overlay on top of physical reality. And of course, we define physical reality as the realm of space and time, matter and energy. That is confined by the three spatial dimensions and the one dimension of time, which Einstein gathered together for us in a single concept called space-time. But what we run into in these kinds of events, and also in the cutting edge of physics today, is that we have simply run out of explanations that we can find within these four dimensions to explain all the observations that we have. And so for me, it was natural to conclude that there is something that is superdimensional or extra-dimensional that would actually be the cause behind these kinds of what we would call non-local events, where we see the observation, but we don't see the cause. And so that's a very important element to how I believe the universe is made.
Okay. Well, let's take one for example. Let's take ghosts. Now, this is something that I think people are going to be surprised about, the phenomenon of ghosts and ghost hunting, which includes sounds and cold spots. How does your theory then come into play for this particular scenario?
Well, here's one of the keys to beginning to understand all of this. It's a matter of taking a look at things from a different paradigm. And so, for example, one of the instances that I talk about to help people understand that is how people, let's say 3,000 years ago or so, when they looked up at the sky, and what they saw in the night sky was a crystalline or a glass sphere with holes punched into it that a light was shining through, and all the planets were in their own particular spheres. And today we have a much different paradigm. When we look at the night sky, we see in our mind something completely different and with a whole entirely higher level of understanding with that modern paradigm. But the key is that the information that was coming through our eyeballs is the exact same information that was coming through them 3,000 years ago. So when it comes to ghosts and disembodied voices and that type of thing, one of the key perceptions, one of the key paradigms to begin to unravel all this is to realize that what we're looking at is information that is materializing. We know today that the entire universe is made of information, so much so that physics has created an extension to the conservation laws. They don't just say that matter and energy can neither be created nor destroyed. They also say now that information can neither be created nor destroyed. So if we have a superphysical source of information and we have a mechanism by which that information can materialize into physical reality in space and time, then we can not only begin to explain things like disembodied voices and apparitions, but we can also explain the strangeness of quantum physics. And as you know, one of the key mysteries that unlocks all of this is the true nature of gravity.
Okay, tell us how the warping of space-time and gravity then is the conduit to this phenomenon.
Well, to understand that, we need to take a look real quick at how quirky gravity is. Science has tried to fit it into one of the four fundamental forces of nature. And yet what thwarts that is that, unlike the other three, we've never been able to find the particle that propagates as a wave to convey the force. In other words, we've never been able to discover a graviton or a gravity wave. When Einstein tried to solve his unified field equations, he stumbled on gravity. He could not express it mathematically in four dimensions. When we try to reconcile his relativity with quantum physics, we stumble on the same thing, gravity. Our standard model of the universe that physicists use as the basis for everything we understand scientifically about the universe has no expression for gravity. So when we start looking at all these things, we come to an understanding that gravity itself is quite a paranormal phenomenon. And so we have places in the universe where we have detected the bending of space, where there is no direct adjacent physical mass to cause it. And to me, that was the key. When we start thinking about different ways to apply the bending of space and what phenomena that bending would create, then the veil lifts, so to speak, and we begin to be able to connect all these different phenomena and why they're occurring.
So you're actually suggesting that there is some sort of subtle bending of time-space, and that acts as a portal?
Absolutely. That's a very good way of looking at it, Rob. When we, everybody's heard of dark matter.
Sure.
What most of the general public isn't aware of because of the air of certitude that scientific authorities presented. The reality of dark matter is there's absolutely not a stitch of evidence for it. It is an imaginary substance. The only reason why there even is a concept of dark matter is because we've discovered there's about 90% more gravitational bending in the universe than there is visible mass to account for it. So science, being a very materialistic philosophy, has made made up a materialistic explanation for this bending. But if we remove this for a moment and say, for example, okay, let's say for a moment that there is no such thing as dark matter. What we have then is the bending of space on a large scale in the universe with no direct physical cause, which means it must be coming outside of the physical. Now, when we combine that bending of space with materializing information within those bends, it opens up all kinds of doors to understand many of the mysteries that are facing us today.
Okay, hold it right there. We're going to walk through some of those doors when we come back. My name is Rob Simone. You're listening to Coast AM. We are back. This is Coast to Coast AM. And we are going to get right to the heart of the matter tonight, because I know all of you that are listening out there have had something weird, quirky, weird, strange, and I want to know about it, because what we're going to do to you is give you sort of a little taste of this theory that Thomas is talking about and see if that doesn't resonate, because it really explained a lot for me and it really set my mind to thinking. Thomas, right before the break, we were talking about this idea of space, time, space, gravity, bending. So tell us about the possibilities, little pockets appearing and having a multitude of paranormal effects.
Right, Rob. The larger picture, in brief, is that how reality is actually put together is that when we talk about these bendings of space and the associated gravity with them, the standard model has said that mass bends space and creates the effect known as gravity. But the idea that we see so much of this bending of space and gravity without adjacent mass leads us to the conclusion that reality is actually put together in the opposite way. In other words, it is the bending of space from a source outside of space-time that creates a field of gravity, and within that crucible is where matter and mass actually materializes. And that's really crazy in a way, because that gives us a clue, a reasoning of how the universe could have actually been created out of nothing. Now, when we take that broad picture,
okay. What
we should be able to do is take a look at little windows of reality and say, let's take that model and look at this little window and see what it can tell us. For example, with quantum physics, we all know the weirdness and quirkiness that happens on the subatomic level. This model would tell us that we see it in that way because reality is not fully materialized yet. And so it cannot be one distinct thing or another yet. It has to actually fully materialize.
All right.
And so that explains to us really in a very general way why quantum physics is so weird. But now let's take a window, what we were talking about earlier, into the paranormal.
Okay.
All right? And let's see what this effect would tell us about paranormal phenomena.
Yeah, say we're, you know, in a haunted house, so to speak, and walk us through it.
Yeah. Now, when we see this gravitational bending in the depths of space, we know that that's pretty much an environment of a vacuum. But when we would see that kind of a thing occur locally here, let's say in a haunted house where we have material, we have substances like atmosphere and molecules.
Sure, air and all that, yeah.
Yeah, we would see some very strange effects. So imagine that we have a bubble of space-time, like a round sphere, that begins to swell and expand from a source outside of space-time that's actually pushing into our realm and expanding one of these bubbles.
Say from a different dimension.
Yeah,
okay.
or like what I would call a super-dimensional type of a realm.
Very good.
Yeah. One of the things that we would see, we know that the bending of space actually crushes and twists and compresses the space at the outside of that ring.
Of the event horizon.
In a sense, yeah. We normally think of space as being empty, but Einstein proved to us it's actually a substance. It's there's a geometry to it.
It's like a fabric, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we have air molecules that are occupying that space,
okay,
what happens is that they undergo an actual mechanical stress. And unlike the vacuum in space, what this has air molecules, and of course the molecules have atoms, the atoms have electrons.
Sure.
When you mechanically stress those types of things, electrons will become agitated and they'll jump into their higher orbits. And so the first thing that we would see in this area is an electromagnetic field that would appear to literally come out of thin air. It would just appear out of nowhere.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now that's pretty big right there. Because as everyone knows, when it comes to strange things in crop circles and everywhere else, there's always this electromagnetic signature that either drains batteries or it's detected by a field detector. So that's interesting. Okay, keep going.
Yes, and the key to it again, if we stick back to the original paradigm, we have no local physically connected cause to produce this electromagnetic field.
Okay.
Which is what makes it paranormal.
So the bubble is opening from somewhere, but we're saying, okay, as it's doing it, it's giving off the kinds of things that we associate and have for very long with these paranormal encounters.
Yeah, we've never had a physical model before this that connects all these phenomena. So,
So as the electrons are getting stimulated, excited because of this slight warping, would they give off photons too?
Well, here's the thing. We know what goes up, even on the subatomic level, what goes up must come down. So the electrons are not going to stay in these higher orbits forever. They're going to expend their excitement and drop back down. Now, under certain conditions, we know this is established science, that we know a couple things that they can do. Electrons, when they drop back down into their lower orbits, they can release photons. And, of course, photons are particles of light. Now, we have a something in our modern age that we use all the time that uses the same effect. You pass an electromagnetic field through a physical material, excite the electrons. When the electrons drop back down, they emit photons. That's what we call an LED. That's a light-emitting diode.
Okay.
So that would also give us, on occasion, a luminous phenomenon. The other thing that it can release would be thermal energy. And under certain circumstances, that would occur. Now, we have a lot of paranormal investigators over the last decade or two. They've been increasingly using these thermal imaging cameras. And they've been picking up some very interesting images in these haunted houses, some of them being so detailed that they actually are a thermal apparition. They look like a person standing there.
Uh-huh. And if it's giving off photons, then, and if it is a curved bubble, it would look like a floating orb.
It could very much.
Yeah.
In fact, if the audience has been following what I'm saying mentally, visually in their minds, if you picture a bubble jacketed in with an electromagnetic field and emitting photons, this is the first scientific picture in history for what a luminous orb is.
And what people have been photographing and seeing for decades.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so take us a little bit further, because now there's this thermal component. I know people say, oh, well, when it gets cold when there's a ghost around.
Well, here's the thing. On the outside of this bubble, and this is one of the things that has confused paranormal investigators, how can we get a heat signature and feel cold at the same time? Well, when these electrons drop back down, they get emitted a heat signature. When we look at these paranormal thermal images, we find they don't look like the wide variation of signatures that we would see in a human being or a living creature. We see a more or less uniform heat signature across the entire surface of the apparition, which means, number one, it's the same mechanism that's occurring over the entire surface. And number two, it's actually happening at the outside surface of this bubble,
okay,
which is all consistent with this model.
All right.
But now, again, when we open up a bubble of space-time, in the presence of material like atmosphere, that type of thing, and that atmosphere holds thermal energy, if it happens very slowly, the laws of equilibrium would allow the thermal energy and the material to flow into that vacuum. Pretty much like water seeking its own level. But Rob, if it happened quick enough, it would be like waking up on a cold winter's day, going up to your front door and opening it up very quickly. You would have a differentiation in pressure. You would have an inrushing. And of course, what this would produce in a haunted house would be, number one, you would get a cold spot. sometimes in the same place where you're recording heat signatures. And the other thing that would happen is the inrushing of air would cause one of these brief mystery breezes that are often reported, where they feel a breeze where all the doors and windows are closed.
Now, how can this bubble that we're saying is being pushed into reality by unknown forces at the moment, how can it explain, say, EVP, electric voice phenomenon?
Well, here's where the idea of materialized information comes in.
All right.
So let's take, for example, if we can for a moment, let's talk about, you know, my one of my favorites, the 19th century Victorian lady apparition.
Okay.
When we understand this as materialized information, when we look at it from that ultra-modern paradigm, we can understand that the lady that lived 150 years ago, everything that comprised her, her body, her clothing, her appearance, her shape, is all materialized information. Now, if that same information came down within a bubble of space-time in a haunted house of today, for example, that same information would materialize in the same way. The bubble would take the exact form of that materialized information, and we would see an apparition. The information, by the way, would prove the existence of time travel of information, because it's traveled from the past into the future. But now when we're talking about EVPs, this is where it gets really, really deep into the rabbit hole. Imagine if there was a vocalization. Let's not talk for a moment about spirits speaking or something like that. Let's talk about a coherent collection of information outside of space-time that was intelligent. It had an intelligence, and it would try to speak into space-time, and a bubble would open, and that vocalized information would begin materializing within that bubble. The outside of that bubble, just like it took the shape of the Victorian lady, it would also take the shape of this materializing vocalization and begin to oscillate. It would vibrate to the frequency and the amplitude of that vocal information. And so what we would have then, Rob, is that we would actually have the face of space itself acting as a speaker. And so what we would actually have, let's say in a disembodied voice, we would actually hear a voice out of thin air, exactly what they hear, because the surface of that materializing bubble is going to agitate the air and compress it in the exact same way as a set of vocal cords does. The other part of that, we talked about earlier about that expanding of space and time, that would create an electromagnetic field at certain wavelengths. That field would also oscillate to the materializing information. So this electromagnetic field given off by this expanding space would now be oscillating just like something where, like an old record player, where the needle would pick up the vibrations from the groove. Now, that electromagnetic field would go to the copper coils of the microphone of the recorder. It would completely bypass the acoustic diaphragm and would impose itself or induce itself upon those coils, and then it would be translated by the electronics into a vocalization that we
So can it's hear. Like a conduit and like a window.
In a sense. Yeah.
Well, what other phenomenon that's widely discussed or seen can be explained by these, you know, these bubbles that are opening up?
Well, in the paranormal, another phenomena that we observe is at certain times we have a malfunctioning of electrical equipment.
Yeah.
And this has been traditionally said that, a spirit is draining energy in order to manifest. And we know if we look at that from pure physics, the physics just isn't there for it.
Well, I mean, if these things are opening up, I can imagine if it opened up near a server, it might cause some problems. This is something that can move. So, I mean, UFOs can consider be explained with this theory too, right?
Absolutely.
Well, I want to ask you about that right after this quick break. We're back in 127 seconds. Yeah, this is Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Thomas P. Fusco. His book is called Behind the Cosmic Veil. And Thomas, I'm trying to get my head around this. Now, it seems like, okay, it's understandable that there's these little bubbles that open up. And I don't know, maybe that explains the Loch Ness Monster and other things. How is it, do you think, that these bubbles are opening up? Is this the intelligence of an extra-dimensional being that's doing it, or is this a function of the cosmos, do you think?
Well, according to my model, these bubbles in space-time are the result in everything that's in the universe, that there is a collection of information that's been called by many names throughout history, Plato's Forms. The Greek Bible calls it the Logos. It's been called implicate order. Edgar Cayce called it Akasha. This information materializes within these bubbles of space-time, and it results in everything that we see.
It's like a portal to all kinds of phenomena. And we're talking about bringing things in from any time, information from any place, right?
Yes. For example, there are a number of sensitives in the paranormal field that speak of being able to detect in certain haunted sites spiritual vortexes.
Okay.
Well, a standing bubble of space-time opened up like this without any materialized information inside of it would physically represent the exact same characteristics that are attributed to a spirit vortex.
Hmm. Well, are there people, do you think, now, living or in history, that were able to manifest something like this happening, to manifest this localized portal from which they could do any number of magical or strange things?
Yeah, this is the great thing about this model, because it starts pulling all these things together. When we look at it from a paradigm of materialized information, everybody in the audience, if you just take a second and look around you, look at the things like your tables, your telephone, your computers. None of these things could occur in nature, even within the confines of random selection given so many millions of years. We human beings actually materialize information. The phone I'm holding is materialized information. And this is something that we have a quality of that reflects the actual creative process in the greater universe, in which our minds are a subset. So it's only a very tiny leap from that point forward to see where the human brain and the human mind could actually directly influence reality and cause information within that brain to materialize in physical reality.
Do you think that another, I don't know, race or another extra-dimensional intelligence could use these, create these portals to enter in to our world, and that's how we see these things, these ships and these UFOs pop into reality and disappear or fly around without any explanation that we can put to with our just rational Western 3D mindset?
Well, this is one of the things that I came to the conclusion. When we just stand back for a moment and take a look at paranormal phenomenon and haunted house, excuse me, and then take a look at the ways these UFOs behave. They do very similar things. It looks like the exact same kind of phenomena once you kind of get the ghost out of the way just for a moment to look at it. And we know it has something to do with gravity. How many people in a haunted house have said that at the onset of an event, we have a feeling of heaviness? And we, according to my model, these expanding bubbles would actually generate this kind of an additional gravitational field. And so their reports of heaviness are literally true.
Hmm.
But if we were to understand, this is what I believe, if UFOs are intelligently designed and controlled craft, what they have done is they have cracked this cosmic code of creation that's reflected in hauntings and paranormal phenomena, and have actually been able to build technology based on it.
So this is the universal way of making anything happen, and so to speak. But you say there are probably very few people on this planet who have lived that can do it completely.
Well, yes, I think there's physical limitations. Like in lower animals, they have brains too, and they reason as well according to the same order. But ours are more advanced, so we have a lot more coherent patterns that we can hold and reason with. But there's a limit to our human ability, just in our flesh and blood brains, to be able to make this happen on a larger scale. We would need technology
Yeah.
To make those kinds of things occur on a larger scale, like a spacecraft.
Well, do you think some, you know, the stories of the Bible are relatable to this type of phenomenon?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the Bible is loaded with miracles, supernatural phenomena. Just take one, for example. We were just talking about the materialization of information in a different location than what it originally started from, like a disembodied voice or more like the apparition.
Mm-hmm.
If we take a look at where Jesus fed 5,000 people with five loaves and two fishes,
okay,
doesn't say that he multiplied these into so many hundreds or thousands of loaves. He said that it says that he fed them with all the same five loaves and two fishes.
Now, that is where the rubber meets the road. We're talking with Thomas Fusco. We're going to talk a little bit more when we come back, and your phone calls. And he says this theory is provable. I want to hear about that. You're listening to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone. Stay tuned. We're coming right back after the break.